I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and this week wish you a Happy New Year. Well, here we are again, back once again.
For the Renegade Master?
Yeah, with the ill behaviour.
It's the Jeep Renegade Master, actually.
The Jeep Renegade.
Back once again for the Jeep Renegade and Master.
The last time I drove a Jeep Renegade, it was actually quite a nice little car in a lot of ways, but every time you locked and unlocked it, it went beep.
Oh, American
which
style.
Just reminds me that that song goes beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop.
I actually quite like that track. It does remind
I like
me
that track.
About being rapidly transported around in a Cavalier SRI, though, unfortunately. Yeah, happy Halcyon days.
Halcyon days.
Hessian
days, very hard wearing days, but a little itchy. Yes. How was your Christmas?
My Christmas was quiet, but actually quite nice. And my New Year's Day was refreshingly good because I was sober. I haven't really drunk much over the last few weeks, and I can't quite remember why. There's not been a motive. So it's been
Is it because
right.
you've been driving around in that Rolls-Royce goat that you borrowed for Christmas?
I've been driving around in the Rolls-Royce goat, speculum. And it's, do you know, it's gone back about 3 days ago. And I really quite miss it. I think it's a fantastic, the only Rolls-Royce I can ever say that is a driver's car. And but there is one thing about it. There's actually two things about it I don't particularly like. But there's one thing about it that I find slightly disappointing. And that is cold starts, it's too loud.
Is it?
Yep.
For a Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, it's too loud.
God, I wouldn't have expected you to say that.
Well, it's A, it's called the Ghost. And B, it's a Rolls-Royce. And it's just rude, isn't it, to have an audible exhaust. And...
Well, hang on. In fairness, some ghosts are quite noisy. I saw it on that documentary Ghostbusters a few years ago. They're always knocking over shit. So,
it's not called the Poltergeist, is it? Although that Black series, my gosh! Instead of the Rolls Black series, why don't they call it the Poltergeist, which just got a really leery, gurgly valve on the exhaust, and it's just
when you least expect it, it only activates at night.
Do you know that's a really strong idea that Rolls should totally buy off us. I really believe that.
Come on, Rolls-Royce, buck your ideas up. Yours, was the one you borrowed, was it a Black Series?
No, normal spec.
Because for those that don't know, the Black Series is sort of their
A Black
sporty...
Label, is it called Black Badge? Black Badge, they call it, don't they? Black Series is Mercedes, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, is it? Well, yes.
I think it's called Black Badge.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's kind of like they're slightly naughtier, I would say urban, in inverted commas, isn't it, version of the Rolls? That's the way I see it.
Well, I think they've done it because they've realised that in some countries, China being an obvious example, that they have a much younger audience. Mm-hmm. People who buy their cars are probably like 35 rather than 65, so they've kind of tried to go a bit youth. Blacking in some of the chrome, and do they have firmer suspension? I can't remember. I'll be honest, I've not been paying attention.
Well, all I know is that when they delivered the Ghost to me, I was having a chit chat with Rolls Royce themselves, who are very cool, actually, I have to say.
With Rolls Royce himself?
Yes. Actually, you say that. Henry Royce used to live about 11 miles from my house.
Did he?
Yeah, it's true.
About 11 miles?
Yeah. Well, it's under 15 and it's more than 10. I don't know. Don't quote me, Henry. Absolutely. Absolutely. Ah. And I really enjoyed that car. I have to say, I thought it was excellent. I expected the ride to be amazing, but the handling was the thing that properly gripped me. Oh. But yeah, it was slightly louder than I wanted it to be, especially on cold start, where you think, you know, it's a car that seems to sort of should really be hushed a little bit more than that. I'd like an extra set of exhaust silencers or something.
They can play tunes on this stuff, so you can get precisely what you want, so which leads me to think that that is entirely deliberate on their part. But I wonder if it's... when Jag made their own V8 in the 90s, well, certainly when they've been using it for a while and the technology got to the point where, you know, you could really sort of just tweak the exhaust sound on startup, or certainly the, you know, the characteristics of the engine and the exhaust valving, if there was any. They, I remember someone from Jag told me that they deliberately made some of those Jags do a proper kind of boom at startup and then go quiet. And it was just there, as the guy explained it to me, it's just to remind you what you've got. And then after that, it goes quiet.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that being just to let you know what kind of power you're dealing with, I suppose. But I just thought that's just not what I would ever buy a Rolls for.
Hmm.
And I compare it to my Tokyo taxi Nissan Cedric, which is unbelievably quiet to the point where I got in it when it was already running and went to turn the key again.
Oh, I've done that. Yeah. Why did I do that in? And it makes a horrible noise, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a vicious thing to do. Don't ever do it. I once did it on my parents' car while my dad was stood talking to me, and he nearly murdered me. It was on their Montego.
It's a really
he went,
"No, noise.
Don't turn it! You'll damage the ring gear." I think he shouted. It's very, very Alan Partridge.
But I'll tell you what I found: the last of the sort of modern Rolls Royces that I drove quite a while ago now was the Wraith Coupe.
Yes,
which was very nice. But because it was so nice in so many ways, including quietness, I think the bits that weren't perfect sort of stood out more. So on the motorway, there was a bit of a sort of fluttery wind noise from the around the mirrors or the screen pillars. And you sort of, because everything else is really, really quiet, you just end up focusing on it.
It
becomes annoying. Yeah.
And well, you want to put some BF Goodrich all terrains on it.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a coming trend, isn't it? Because last week they announced that Singer sort of Safari style 911, but in true Singer style, they've absolutely gone to town in league with a guy Richard Tuttle, who makes Safari 911s in the UK.
Yeah,
and it's quite a magnificent looking thing.
It's a hell of
the guy who commissioned it. Oh, actually ordered two and then said, look, if you want to sell any to anyone else, I'm happy with that, which I thought was, you know...
So hang on, he's paid for the R&D, pretty much.
Well, I guess so, because I think they were saying it was it 1.7 million or something?
Is it that much?
Yeah, I think that was for the two cars.
Shagpile carpet, wow.
I mean, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, it's like, weren't those ridiculous replica Bond gadgets...
Oh, yeah, the
DB5s. Over £3 million.
I think they were. I mean,
they were
more
insanely expensive. And, you know, a lot of these recreations, the XKSSs and the DB4 Zagato and all that stuff, they're all multi-million pound cars. And quite honestly, I'd rather have those 911s. At least they look like they've got quite good fun. And you could use them and they hopefully wouldn't break because they're meant to do hardcore stuff. But I just thought they were really nice design. Really good looking bits of work.
I've got two relevant things to say here whilst I'm sitting in my office, which I haven't used for some weeks, and actually the thermostat's saying 7 degrees next to me, so I've got a rug around my legs like an old coffin dodger. But and I can see my own
would
breath,
you like a tea?
I first things first, in that same vein as what Singer have done with the I can't remember. It's three initials. Is it like CLA or something? Or
I can't remember either.
I can't remember. It's bad, isn't it? It's a bit unprofessional.
You keep talking. I'll look it up.
Yeah. Like, no, Rich.
We'll,
brilliant.
You know,
thank
we'll
you.
Pretend that we actually know what the fuck we're doing.
And I think
ACS. It's the ACS, Johnny. As you well knew, of course, you were just pretending.
I think I bought my carpets from ACS a couple of years ago.
They've always got a sale on.
Oh, always. I just can't work out if I'm getting a good deal, but I commit anyway. But I think the great thing about the sort of rally Porsche is it's the same-ish, the same kind of body, higher up, more suspension trouble. And I think that mantra should be applied to saloon cars with a view to trying to kill the SUV. So take, for example, the Rolls that we've just been talking about. I looked at the Ghost and I thought, hang on. The Cullinan is now the best-selling Rolls, but the Ghost, the previous Ghost, was the best-selling Rolls ever for years. Why didn't they just why didn't they just make that a high-rise ghost? And so it's an option, a bit like the aerial nomad. It's kind of it's kind of an Atom with long travel suspension and different tyres and wheel combination. Just do it with a saloon car and kill the SUV. Brilliant.
Cheaper. I have a feeling it might be on its way. Because
I really hope so.
You know, everybody seems to have gone a bit nuts over Safari 911s. I'm getting a bit bored of this now. I saw someone had safariised a 1977 911 Targa. It's
a
for
Targa?
Sale on Car and Classic at the moment, or it was last week. And I was just like, give it a rest. Come on. That's just, I mean, on the one hand, you kind of go, well, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? That's all right. And, you know, they're not, as I always say about 911s, no matter how silly the values go, most ordinary 911s are not rare cars. They made loads of them, and they last, so they're around. So if someone wants to monkey with one, knock yourself out, it's fine. But the Safari thing feels like it's getting a little bit out of hand, in as much as everybody's doing it, and some do it better than others, and that's why I sort of feel like this Singer is like, that's the best anyone's ever done it, so everyone should just stop now and think of something else.
Oh, okay, so they've reached peak. It's like, just you can't.
You'll never do as well as that. It's beautiful. The detailing is extraordinary. The design is great. I just think, you know, you're not going to get that close, so just give it a rest. But hey, if people want to muck with 911s, it's fine. Like I say, there's plenty left over. But
if we could order a Rolls Wraith Dakar.
Yeah, well, exactly. And also, I mean, if you're going to be a purist about it, there's a little bit of heritage there, because people did do rallies in Shads back in the day, didn't they?
They did.
And why not do a sort of replica of a rally Shad with a ghost?
And this goes back to a little conversation I had with Simon from Aerial Cars, Dan in Somerset. And I remember when the Nomad first came out, I think, we had a little chit-chat, and I said, look, Simon, I love the idea of this, but wouldn't it be nice to just have like a removable body shell? You know, like a bit like a radio control car where you take the pins off and you lift the body off, and then you've got the skeleton chassis underneath. And I said, could I not like commission you to put the body of something over the Nomad? So on a day where it's wazzing with rain, I just think, oh, I'll just put a little body on it. It'll be all right. Bit of Rain X over the screen. Just just be done with it. And then I said to him, well, what I want really is I'd like an Austin Princess. But you imagine if you had a Dakar Princess. Seriously, he looked
did
at
he
me.
Suddenly go, oh, I've just remembered I've got a meeting, and walk away at this point?
To his credit, he did go, actually, that would be really funny. And I said, well, why not? It'd be like, I don't know, it'd be the Priscilla Queen of the Desert or something. It would be it'd be Dakar Princess. I think that could be really cool. But no, I like the idea of sort of a saloon car or kind of Audi All-Road type thing, I suppose. It already exists.
Yeah. No, but I think this is coming. So if you, apart from the Safari thing, if you look at, obviously the Nomad's already out there doing exactly like you said, you know, it's basically just a jacked up Atom, isn't it? Well, in concept at least. But then there was that Lamborghini Huracan Serato, wasn't it, which was same idea, which was a concept, but, you know, they're clearly thinking about it. And then there have been some pap shots recently of current shape 911s being tested with jacked up ride height. So the smart money says that there's a Safari, a factory 992 shape Safari 911 coming. And I think, you know, that starts to open the floodgates and it all gets a bit interesting. And then, yeah,
then
maybe.
It gets mainstream.
Because, and it does. And then as we move towards more and more electrification, it's in the car maker's interest to try and persuade people to buy lower bloody cars because, you know, smaller frontal area means greater efficiency for greater range and all that shit.
And all that.
So, and all that of it. Ooh, now.
That's the overly generous Mancunian creeping in again, isn't it?
Have it.
Grabs you by the scruff. Have it. And just gives you the keys to a house. So it's the total opposite of mugging. It's really aggressive giving. He just picks a tramp up by his old coat and goes, you have it. Actually, that's not Mancunian at all. That's Cockney.
No,
but you know
well,
what
this,
I mean.
This reminded me, since we were sort of doing Cockney/Essex accents, that I wanted to, when we brought up Christmas before, I was going to bring up one of my favourite things I got for Christmas, which is a book called Secret Foods.
I saw you sent me
Steve
a photo.
Saxty. I did send you a picture, didn't I? Because it's
did.
Absolute fold filth.
So secret
from start to finish.
Forward.
It is. It's hyper nerdy, but it is the best made, best written hyper nerdy car book I've read in a long time, possibly ever.
Is it a new book? Just new?
Yeah, yeah, it's fairly new. I think I think it only came out a matter of weeks ago, maybe. I think I only spotted it just before Christmas when my wife was going, seriously, what do you want for Christmas? Because, you know, I'm a middle-aged man, and so I'm, in inverted commas, hard to buy for. And it's partly because, you know, you become a middle-aged man, and if everything's working out okay, then generally if you want something, you just go and buy it for yourself when you want it.
Well, this is the thing. You do tend to do that. I've given lots of niche links to my wife to say, well, just... that's what I'd like. I'm looking for one of them. She's going, I'm not going to buy that. You can just buy that. So I have to sort of say other stuff.
That's like I did. There was one book. I basically just got books for Christmas because it's all I could think of that I actually wanted. And there was another one, which is less a book, more of a pamphlet, but it's published by the Rover 200 and 400 Owners Club. So, yeah, that titan of publishing. And
hang on, Rupert Murdoch's just on the other line. He's
feeling
going, threatened.
What? They're doing what? Oh my God. Yeah. They've bought the whole D.H. Lawrence back catalogue. Oh my God. They put out a book which is the inside story of the R3 shape Rover 200, the third generation car. And it's a load of stories written by people who actually worked on it.
Is this the long bonneted thing that pictures?
Oh no, that was separate.
Oh gosh, it's so nerdy.
A picture someone put on Twitter of two freakishly mutated Rover 200s with weirdly long bonnets, which were test mules for when they wanted to put Rover were thinking of putting long ways engines into their next generation of medium sized cars, but still front wheel drive, sort of like an Audi configuration. The reason being that then they could share engines more easily with BMW, because all BMW engines at that point sat long ways. You're being called.
Just one second. Yeah, I've got one of my kids. Hello. I'm on a podcast, darling. Yeah. Well, never mind. What's done is done.
Was that a sorry?
Yeah, sorry. Bit late.
Did you get a sorry?
I got a sorry. But I might, if I've got that recorded, that's possibly the first genuine sorry I've had from my daughter in 11 and a half years. However,
and all it took was for you to podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good job she interrupted, because Christ, I was being boring then. Anyway, I was the inside story of the Rover R3 pamphlet was so nerdy that I didn't even dare ask my wife to buy it for me. I just bought it for myself. But Secret Forwards, because it's a very professionally done book, and since it was my sort of main Christmas present, I asked if I could have the deluxe edition, which comes in a box and
Seriously?
Has an extra pamphlet with more filth in it.
Have you got that much of an interest in unmade Fords?
I've got an interest in unmade cars. I love the stuff that didn't make it. And I do, you know, Fords are interesting. And it's also, this book, the author is promising a volume two. This is volume one, which stretches from 1970 to, I think, 1980, late 80s. I'm trying to think which car it ends with. It covers... like
all of the Escorts and the Fiestas.
The Sierra. I'll give you an example of also why it's... sort of absolutely nerdalicious for someone like me, and then why the deluxe edition with the supplement is just like, it's just like the cherry on top. In the Sierra chapter, because bear in mind this author, Steve Sexty, has been allowed access to Ford's archive, which is not an easy thing. He's an ex-designer for them, so he has sort of an in there. But he was allowed to go and rummage through their archive, which people aren't normally allowed to do, so he's just pulled out all these pictures. And the supplement is there for sort of extra photos he couldn't fit into the main book, but which he thought that, you know, deeply nerdy people like me would find interesting. So in the main book, there's a photo of the very first Sierra prototype on, I think it's sort of its first journey outside the workshop at the Lommel Proving Ground in Belgium, where Ford tested all their cars. But in the supplement, he's included like five other photos of it driving along, just because it's like from different angles. And a lot of people would go, no, I think we've got the gist now, Steve. Whereas I was going, bloody brilliant. I wonder if there's any more. So there's loads of you know, photos of clay models and fiberglass models of cars that didn't make it, or designs for things that we know but that were rejected or that were earlier evolutions. There's a load of stuff about the Escort RS1700T, the rally car of the
Oh, yeah.
Very early 80s that got ditched in favour of the RS200. It's, in fact, I think the book does end at the RS-200. There's a chapter on the Aero Granada, which is good.
Yeah, Mark III.
Yeah, see, now you're interested.
All right, you're hooking me in. Is there a mention of the Mercure, which is the American name for it, wasn't it? They did a Mercure.
Or Mercure? Mercure Scorpio.
Mercure, I don't know.
Great. I mean, there's loads of, you know, because obviously, you know, I like a nerdy fact because I keep writing
books. You write
books
about it. So this is just fodder for the next book, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, well, there's a great one in there. You know, throughout the 70s, all Ford new car projects in Europe were codenamed with women's names for reasons that are never quite entirely clear, but I think it started, they just named them after women in the, like, the secretarial pool.
They just weaned them off female conquests off of the
Yeah, era. Well, in retrospect, it's a bit like, ooh, but, you know, so there was Brenda and the Sierra was called Tony with an I, and, well, I'd quite liked it if it was Tony with a Y as well. It was just named after a bloke.
It's just Tony and Tony, wasn't it?
Tony, and they switched in the early 80s.
I love that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was the Mark II Escort, I think. Anyway, they suddenly went, presumably they sort of went, this is a bit weird. Let's use some names from Greek mythology.
And yeah, of course. It's the logical progression.
It's completely logical. And then so the new Granada project started sort of at the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, was codenamed Scorpio. And then they had a rethink. They went, should we be grown-ups and use, like, alphanumeric codes like every other car company mostly does? So they switched, but Scorpio, the original code name, became the name of the car in production, apart from in the UK.
Scorpio's is the name of the strangest nightclub I've ever been to. Ever. And I mean ever.
Of course it is.
Definitely not the best, but the strangest. It wins an award for that. And it was in a place called Creef in Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
And I went there probably 20 years ago, and we were on a bit of a lads long weekend. And I went with a couple of our mutual friends who were in car mags at the time. And in fact, I can date how old this was because the Mini Cooper had just come out.
Was one of the people you were with Scottish?
Yes.
Okay, I know who
that is. That's how we ended up in there, because it was recommended to us. And do you know what the main draw was, according to him, no one else? Oh, well, when the lights go on at the end and it's closing time, they give everyone a ham sandwich wrapped in cellophane. And you're like, what? I said, hang on, I beg your pardon, just rewind. This is a nightclub and you get given a ham sandwich on the way out. But it just keeps people from being leery and keeps everyone calm. It's like, what? I just don't understand. They just give drunk people
free food. That's quite a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. Just go, and of course, because it was Scotland, it was white cheap bread. But anyway, yeah,
well, but even so, it's a ham roll is a ham roll. When you
when you're banjaxed, I guess. I mean, I don't eat meat, but it was fine for everybody else. It's okay.
I'm going to guess this was Scotland quite a few years ago. There was no vegetarian option.
No, I don't think. I think it was just cheese. But when you don't get options when you've been kicked out of a nightclub. It's the get out. Just get out. You're not allowed to sleep in the toilets. Please don't do what you're doing in the doorway. Get out. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, that's so. And it was called Scorpios. And I remember we were already a little bit wasted before we went in. But I remember just thinking it was hilarious. On the dance floor, I looked up and I saw two things. I saw a DJ booth with two record decks on it, with a curtain covering it, covered in dust, so it hadn't been used in years. And then there was a bloke with a CD player just across the way who was trying to hide, I think. But then on the wall above the dance floor was an 80s Athena poster with Ferrari F40 and a load of dry ice. You remember those posters?
Yes.
So it was the Ferrari F40 in profile picture, front shot, rear shot, side shot, and it had dry ice all around the lower kind of 12 inches of the car.
Yeah,
that was on the dance floor of a club.
Are you sure it was a club and not a teenager's bedroom from the 80s?
Well, that's what it felt like. And then there was a sign for the chill out room, and we went down there, and it. It was a room with a load of primary school chairs lined up along one end and just nothing else. So in other words, it's a room if you're feeling a bit sick and you want to escape the lads, just go in there. It was very weird.
Oh my God.
There you go.
Now, I was going to... since we were talking about forwards, sort of, I won't go back to that book because I've said it. It's really good. If you're
going
interested
back to that
in,
book,
in Secret Cars, it's not cheap, the book, but it is really good. And it's really well written. It's like a lot of those nerdy books, they fall down because they're not really that well written, or they sort of don't give you enough detail where you'd like it. This is perfect. It's loads of information, plus it's got a sort of slight sense of humour to it, which is always nice.
There must be a lot of references to RSs in there, RS Fords.
Absolutely loads.
So how do they spell sport when the word sport is mentioned inside that book?
That's what the supplement is for with the deluxe edition. It's just where the word sport keeps on going.
Well, it's a 3-page sport. Is that what it is?
But listen. Look, guys, listen. Look, guys, look.
Spot. Spot. Spot.
I've got to read out. I wasn't going to do any readers' emails this week, although we have had quite a few over the holiday period. Thank you for everyone's email. We will go back through them. But this one just came in the other day, and I've got to read it out now before I forget or it gets lost or something, because it refs back to something you mentioned in an earlier podcast about the Network Q VHS cabinet of pornography.
Yes.
And so... a listener called Ben Draycott-Jones has emailed in from Singapore, where he now lives. He says, "Hello again from Singapore and Happy New Year. Your recent hilarious discussion about the Network Q porn archive took me instantly back more than 20 years to an incident I'd completely forgotten about. This is the Ford Dunton Research and Engineering Centre, circa 1996. And I had literally just finished university and got a contract gig in a department that basically did procurement and parts timing. I think smoking in the office had recently been banned, but there are a lot of waiting for retirement people in this department who you can imagine would have a fag on the go at their desk pretty much all day. One of the aforementioned guys, Frank, came into our cubicle one day when myself and a couple of other young'uns were having lunch. I even remember his words. 'All right, lads, does anyone want any pornography as our drawer is full to bursting?' Slightly confused but intrigued, we went over to Frank's cubicle, which had the usual 1 metre wide by 1.5 metre triple drawer unit generally reserved for filling with files. However, instead of documents pertaining to the release of parts of the first-gen Ford Focus, this drawer was virtually buckling under its own weight of grot mags. If I recall, there was approximately 4 piles of nearly half a metre of pure scud, ranging from the usual Fiesta, Escort and Nave through to the more specialist, fat and over 50, Razzle, and then, in inverted commas, the German pile. These guys, along with many others, regularly travelled back and forwards to the sister R&D plant in Cologne, Germany, and were in some competition to see who could bring back the most depraved porn for the Ford Motor Company library. The standard practice was to bring it back from Germany and then stick it in the internal mail to Frank as a surprise.
I've just got this image of a Famoco absolute filth archive.
I know, it's extraordinary, isn't it? On company premises. So Ben goes on to say, the best bit, though, was the drawer above it was a shared filing drawer, and the top drawer was where all the department's tea-making facilities were kept. So at any point of the day, there was usually someone in this cubicle boiling the kettle, which was perched on top of the unit, blissfully unaware that mere inches from their feet was an unlocked drawer with one of the biggest stashes of grumble mags ever hoarded by mankind.
Oh, happy 2021. That's cheering
so
much.
Ben, thank you for that. He finishes by saying, yes, of course we helped ourselves. The internet was still in its infancy. Stay safe, regards, Ben. So thank you, Ben. That's fabulous. That's absolutely brilliant. A bizarre, slightly troubling story of the fact that
pre-internet
Ford,
stashes of adult material.
Ford could easily rival Vauxhall for an in-house stash of grot, which
do you know what? Maybe,
lovely. Thanks.
Maybe this should be resurrected, but I think the only people that could properly take it to the level that would be needed would be the Australians. So it should really be the Bathurst sort of like filth slinging competition. So you have the Ford clan on one hill and the Holden clan on the other. And it is just like finding and throwing the worst adult material at one another. And there's got to be some sort of invigilator in the middle. This is brilliant. Absolutely.
Hey, actually,
brilliant.
Sad times. I just discovered the other day that Holden officially ceased to exist on the 31st of December.
What was it? Was it really? So 2021 is the first year without Holden?
Yeah, this is it now. They announced they were sort of essentially shutting up shop.
Yeah, yeah.
But the official date of Holden ceasing to be and thing was New Year's. End of last year.
Oh, that's annoying. That means I'm
so
never,
yeah. Pour one out for.
I'm never going to have gone to Australia when Holden's were in production. That's sad.
Oh,
I've never been there.
It's like finding out that an animal's died out, isn't it? And going, oh God. Oh, I mean, what's the point of going to Madagascar now if there's no lemurs.
Yeah,
there are still lemurs.
Thank God. It's also a panther lemur, which is an amazing car that isn't amazing at all.
No, it's really not.
No, it's just not, is it? Unfortunately, is it? Hang on, is the panther lemur the one that was based on the Triumph Dolomite, or is that another?
No, that was the Rio.
Oh, the Rio! Gosh, you really got a better memory.
Which was also, I was going to nick a joke from. I think it was Car Magazine. Once did a road test of the Kia Rio when that first came out.
Yes.
And the headline was, her name is Rio and she's crap.
Her name is Rio and she's crap. Fundamentally disappointing. It's got a fantastic
and then
ring to it.
Within mere few years, they will be an enormous world-beating part of the Hyundai. Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, did you see this again last week that Kia have got a new logo? They made a bit of a fuss about it,
and it's
not very clear. Yeah, it looks to me like it sort of says Vivi or something. It's like it's a I quite like the
oh hang on is it ones. Slightly is it slightly italic?
Oh, it's mega italic. It's
okay.
Like,
I did
but
see
sort
it.
Of it's very stylized.
I saw it on Twitter for the first time this morning, but I didn't know that's what it said.
No.
So in other words, I don't know if it's done its job.
Particularly when it's shrunk down, it definitely looks like it's supposed to say something else. It doesn't leap out at you. And then they've got a new slogan as well, which is movement that inspires.
It was the power to surprise, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yeah. Which, in fairness, lots of things have the power to surprise. I mean,
yes, I've got it now. I've just brought it up. I thought it said via or via.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? I don't think it's brilliant, but
movement that inspires. Oh,
and I think they've got rid of the. It looks like it doesn't have a. You know, the old one sort of had an ellipse around it, so it's or an oval or something. So it sort of sat well on a badge. But this, I don't know what they're going to do. It's going to put it on a black badge. Is the badge going to be the same shape or is it going to be round? Or I don't know. Anyway, but also, the new slogan, movement that inspires, is a bit bollocksy, isn't it? Because I can't hear the word movement without thinking about poo. So I get stuck there.
It's a bit like that term Brownian motion. Which is you've heard of that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, I remember I wrote an Aston Martin feature years ago, and I called it David Brownie in Motion, and nobody liked it. I thought it was a great title, but nobody else seemed to appreciate it. But there you go. It turned out that I was sort of mentioning how much of the interior of the Aston was fundamentally disappointing, but just kind of. Switch gear off that car and that sort of thing. Talking of Aston, so it was actually something I was going to say to you post Christmas, and I think you might share my view. And I'm going to put my hand up now and say I think this could be an unpopular opinion, but Christmas especially is a time when this sort of stuff bubbles to the top. Lego Technic. Licensed cars. I was actually sent one this Christmas, and I'm actually really thankful for that. I'm not going to keep it. I'm going to give it to a local child. But locally
sourced. You mean one of your children, or local than that?
No, I'll be honest. I'm going to give it to someone who's probably in more need and would probably appreciate it more. But it's an amazingly detailed kit, and it's an Aston Martin DB5 Lego Technic kit.
Oh, I saw this. So were Lego sending these out to people?
Look, I'm going to be honest. I can't hide it. This was sent to me by Aston Martin as a Christmas present.
Okay.
And it was lovely. It came with a really nice
This suddenly explains why I've seen a couple of car journalists on social media going, "Go, I think I'm going to build this DB5 I got for Christmas." And like, "Oh right, okay, got."
And I, commas. Yeah. And I look, it's lovely to have got it because I know these things aren't cheap, and I know there's a lot of our peers that are really into Lego, but I have to say two things. A, Lego Technic models of real cars never look like the real car. Do you know what they look like? They all look like Cat D. They all look like badly damaged versions of the car you're trying to create. In other words, it's already been smashed up, but you kind of knew it was a 911, sort of.
No, I think it's even worse than that. I think they all look like those pictures that sometimes crop up on Twitter where, like, some bloke in Belarus has tried to make a Bugatti Chiron, but he hasn't got a Chiron, so he's based it on a Hillman Imp or something.
Oh, and those!
It's sort of close, but not quite. In fact, not even fucking close. And it's...
Is it
it's
David
that.
Brown's Speedback
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that was sort of... I don't know what was going on there. But okay. No, I'm with you.
So like Belarus panel beater.
They never look right, do they? And it's sort of... It's disappointing.
Troubling.
The problem was even the Defenders, which you think, if you can't accurately mimic a very slabby square car with Lego,
then you've got no hope for
anything. That said, I got my boy, or we got given, I can't remember, for his birthday, not by a car maker, just by a person, a little Lego, like proper Lego, not Technics, a little 911 Turbo, like a 930 shape.
Yeah.
And again, it still suffers the same problem. It doesn't really look exactly like, but there's something quite pleasing about it, the way they've tried. But once you get to the Technics level and it's so complicated and so big and so expensive, you sort of go... It's not really looks. It doesn't, does it?
And I know this is probably going to be an unpopular opinion, but that's the main problem I have is it's costing a lot of money here, and when it's finished, and I know the joy is in the building for a lot of people, and it probably is for me. Ultimately, when it sits on your desk or on your kid's shelf, it still doesn't fucking look like the thing it's supposed to look like, and I think it should. So. The amount of money that it's cost, I'm always arguing the counter argument of just buy a Tamiya RC kit. And there's two reasons for that. One, when it's built, it looks like the thing it's supposed to. Two, when it is built, you can actually drive it. You can choose to park it on a shelf or you can drive it. And when you crash it, you can rebuild it because you've worked out how to build it and it comes apart like a real car. So I actually think for similar money, and Tamiya are not paying me to say this, Just buy a Tamiya RC kit. Anyway, Lego are wealthy enough these days. They've done all these horrible, horrible CGI films and silly
Don't you
Marvel
like the films.
I can't stand the whole collaboration with like Marvel comics and stuff. Like Lego Batman. Nobody wants a Lego Batman. Don't talk bollocks. Why do I
it's
want
really
Lego
funny,
and
that
Batman
film.
To be in bed together? It's a stupid idea. They
I think
not
I'd rather Lego in my
all.
Bed than on the floor. Because then you'd get out of the bed and. It hurts, but...
Do I want a Lego computer game? Why do I want a video game of a Lego person? It's a shit idea. It's a really, really shit collaboration.
I didn't realise you felt that strongly.
No, I just find it highly irritating. Lego is great. Really great educational tool. And I said this to my son the other day. Is his uncle, my brother... like was so into Lego Technic when we were growing up, and I swear that was one of the catalysts for him to become an engineer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is where when it tries to create the realism, that's where Lego Technic trips up. It's the combination of that and the fact that they're too greedy and they charge too much for it now. Whereas Tamiya, the prices have kind of stayed the same since the 80s. Yeah, they really have, if you look at the prices.
Really? I mean, they're not cheap, though, are they? Because I looked at them, like just getting a grasshopper or something.
Yeah, what, 130 quid with the radio gear?
Is it? Okay. Mm-hmm. It was just the kind of money where I balked at buying it for a six-year-old, which is, you know, my lad's six, and I got him a remote control car for Christmas as a little thing, you know, something he wanted, but I, you know, made the mistake of getting like a 20-quid jobby, and of course it's already broken.
Of course, and he can't buy bits for it. You should have bought him a grasshopper, and when he does leather yeah. it into a curb, you can buy the wishbones for £6 plus VAT. Yeah.
Hey ho, you live on the next.
But you know what? Look, I know I'm going to come under fire for my unpopular opinion, but I had to vent it, Rich.
No, I do agree with you up to a point. I mean, I'm not having a word said against Lego Batman the movie because it's funny, but the thing about Technics cars trying to look like stuff. Yeah, I know it's.
So you go in category. What's the worst damage that a car?
Well, they've changed it all now, haven't they? So cats. Yeah. You don't get Cat Dealey anymore. It's Cat S, isn't it? And Cat F for fucked. I can't remember.
It's F for fucked. S for smashed.
I always forget this.
Smashed and fecked. Those yeah. are the two.
Category smashed.
It's had a smash. But it's not terrible. It's just a bit of a smash. Oh, okay. Cat F. Oh, yeah, it's completely fecked. I'm sorry.
Fact, mate. Sorry. Yeah, funny enough, because I was going to say, the thing about Lego of any type is that no matter how old you are, there is something deeply satisfying about it, putting a kit together. And, I have to stop now because it's like my boy is of an age where, you know, he can put together a Lego kit, and I have to sort of stop myself doing it all because it's just satisfying.
Oh, because the need is great.
Yeah. I tell you what else I discovered over the Christmas period. I'd forgotten the simple pleasures of a jigsaw.
I love a jigsaw.
I haven't done a jigsaw for years, and our kids got given one.
First lockdown, we did a fair amount of them. And
did you?
Yeah. It's one of those things where sometimes you get a jigsaw as a gift, or your kids do, and it isn't the first toy that gets played with, is it? Let's not lie.
No.
So then you rediscover it, and I quite like it when the kids rediscover toys because they don't realise how lucky they are sometimes. And you go, just delve back into the drawer and see what's around. You go, oh my gosh, there's a massive jigsaw of a lion's head that we've never opened. Yes, there is. Let's have a look at that. And we did. And I found it. I definitely had a moment of the kids had been gone for half an hour, and I was still chugging away at trying to find a bit of lion's mane. And my wife walked in and went, you do know the kids are no longer playing with it. And I went, oh, yeah. I was in the zone. Yeah.
We had the same thing because our kids completely lost interest and wandered off. And I realised it was just my wife and me.
Yeah.
You know, and my wife.
Oh, so she was...
And we were getting a bit competitive as well, trying to finish it off. And then had to stop ourselves and go, no, leave it. Wait till the kids come back. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll get them reinterested. And in the end, I came downstairs and it was on the kitchen table and it had been finished. And it turned out my wife had finished it on her own because she couldn't bear it. So...
there's a lot to be said for those small therapeutic actions. In fact, I'm sitting here looking across at my little book rack, and there's a Die Hard colouring book on there, which I started last Christmas and I still haven't finished it, and it's really
fun. I'm sorry, what, a Die Hard colouring book?
Yeah, my wife got me a Die Hard colouring book for Christmas. It was actually really good.
Wow.
Yeah, my favourite, I think the centrefold is Now I Have a Machine Gun, Ho Ho Ho, the dead man in the lift. I started colouring him in, haven't finished him yet. Happy Christmas. Yeah,
I tell you what else it was very satisfying was that thing you sent me over the Christmas period, that link to that incredible model railway on YouTube.
Oh man!
And I just sat and watched that. I mean, it was just, they just sort of tracked around a train going around the whole thing, didn't they? Someone just filmed it on their phone, I think. But it was and it was like 10 minutes long, and I just sat there and watched the whole thing. It was delightful.
I said to you in the WhatsApp message back, I've always had a fascination for minutiae. In general, but we noticed my son, he's definitely got that in him as well. He loves miniature stuff and the detail. And I've always loved model railways because it's not so much the playing with the railway. I think it's just the level of realism that someone's gone to create the little ecosystem. I love the little ecosystem, and the ones that the videos that I forwarded you with the narrowest gauge railway you can get, which I think is N gauge. or certainly mainstream. I think you can get like watchmaker's gauge, which is sort of you need specialist eyewear to see the train and stuff. But but that's really bonkers. But N gauge, and there's ones where it's like a 2 foot square railway layout that fits on a tabletop, but it's like a mountain scene from Switzerland, and it's idyllic. I think that's what it is. You're creating your own perfect landscape, and it's just instant escapism, isn't it? You just stare at it long enough, and you can feel yourself disappearing in. I do find it quite therapeutic, and I've threatened my wife and said, I am going to build something that good at some point before I die, but probably a long time before I die, pre-retirement, whatever retirement is for our...
Don't get me started.
Don't worry about retirement.
There's possibly a sort of element as well of in an increasingly strange and sometimes frightening world that sort of looking at these little microcosms, they're perfect worlds, like you say, but they're also, sort of like everything's under control. It's all nice. And it's safe, and nothing's going to suddenly go madly out of control. I mean, a train might come derailed, but that's easily fixed.
Yeah, but there's no death, is there?
No, it's all just...
That's why Model Villages, why I absolutely love Model Villages. So I'm going to take you to Model
Villages. I was going to ask if you like Model Villages, because I sort of assumed you would. I like Model Villages as well. They're good. A friend of mine in the US is a member of a model train club, where they actually have a sort of big, like, warehousey sort of place, where they have this huge track and people come down. It's a whole thing. And, you get to be the controller, the signalman kind of thing in the box where you do all the points and stuff like that. It was a big job, great honour to do that. But he said that what's interesting about it as well is that they have a surprisingly broad range of members, but it sort of seems to attract people who are possibly outsiders in regular society. And this is like their sort of safe space.
It's like a sanctuary. I can see that.
They've got all sorts of members from all sorts of backgrounds, but the common ground is they love these little trains, and they just like this little sanctuary where they can go and talk about them and run them around and stuff like that.
I can see that, but I think now, we're speaking from the safety of our own homes again, aren't we? I know that some of the stuff I've started to look at more on Instagram are the things that I became fascinated with from an early age, which is modelling, like radio control, scale modelling, and aquariums. Again, because I think an aquarium is its own little ecosystem, because it has to be, it's a living thing. But also some of the levels which people are going to nowadays with the technology that we've got for filtration and the kind of lighting, the LED lighting we can, some of the underwater scenes, aquascaping it's called, it's like a niche. It's incredible, because it's like an underwater forest.
Right.
But you can have one that's not very big, but it just looks amazing. And I've
so if I put aquascaping into Instagram, I will see these things.
Yeah.
Do you remember we were talking, not on the show, we were talking, I think, when we were down at Goodwood last year, about how Instagram's algorithm sort of, if you go to the search bit, it just gives you a sort of a load of stuff.
Yeah.
Presents you with a sort of tiled, a mosaic of things it thinks you might like.
Yes.
And mine started, it's usually cars and watches, and then it started popping aeroplanes in there. And then it started feeding me a lot of boobsy women doing dancing and stuff in videos. And I was like, okay, well, all right, I'm not... I'm not going, oh, for God's sake. But at the same time, it's like, I don't ask for this. That's sort of gone away again, because it started feeding me maritime disasters. And I don't understand why. It's really weird. And now they seem to have receded again without me doing anything. Because the thing is, I thought, now I know what's happening here, right? It shows me a load of cars.
It's waiting.
I'll go,
for me,
ooh,
to
there's
bounce.
A Renault 11. I'll tap on that. And then the algorithm goes, he liked that, right? Knew it. He likes cars. Find more old Renaults and things like that. That's fine. So they never go away. Same with the watches. I'll go, oh, blimey, look at that. Look, there's a lovely old 1970s Omega Speedmaster. I'll tap on that. And so it keeps showing me things like that, vintage watches.
Yeah.
Now, you know, occasionally you go, oh, there's a boobsy woman, I'll have a look at that. So you kind of think, well, now that's just going to keep showing those. But then, no, it sort of stopped. And at some point it clearly went, he's probably bored of the women now in low-cut tops and bikinis and things. He probably wants maritime disasters. I mean, not disasters, but like, sunken boats. And there's some incredible videos of them deliberately sinking massive old ships.
Oh, what, for diving,
for
recreational
reefs,
diving?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it does encourage marine life to recolonise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, they clean up an old freighter or something, and then they sink it, they scuttle it, and it's incredible to behold and, you know, and fascinating. So any of that, I would tap on it. And you'd think the algorithm would go, well, he's definitely into the old maritime shit, let's keep going. But no, it's just stopped. I do not know what Instagram are playing at, but it's weird. I cannot wait to see what it sends me next.
I had that with ambitious Soviet engineering projects. I think I might have searched for one once to do with the Ekrana plan that you've probably heard.
Oh, yeah.
My brother was describing it to me a year ago or so, assuming that I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I said, what is this thing you're talking about? He went, oh, my God, Johnny. Look up a Ekrana plan. It's like the most scary looking kind of land sea monster.
I think I bought a very minimalist armchair from them once, a Ekrana plan.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Lovely Swedish, I think. The Caspian Sea Monster is the most famous Ekrana plan, isn't it? So it's an extraordinary thing. Yeah. I always wondered about those. It's like, it's all well and good, but they were, you know, from the Caspian Sea Monsters from the 70s?
70s. Yeah.
Now, I guess they did have radar, but that thing's clipping along, or was supposed to.
What
if there's somebody in a fishing boat or something?
You're completely doomed.
Yeah,
I'm going to say.
Is that why they never caught on? I don't understand.
I mean,
it seemed quite clever.
I think they used to share the same water space with a jet ski school, and it just didn't go down well.
Windsurfing academy.
Yeah, exactly.
Duck!
And it was like, oh god, the Ekrana plan's out. Everybody clear.
Ekrana plan.
Yeah, there's something. Yeah. But you know what? There's a derelict one that's beached and. And so it's sitting on the shoreline, gradually returning to Earth.
But that's the Caspian Sea Monster, isn't it? On the edge of the Black Sea.
Yeah.
Or the Caspian Sea, I suppose.
But there is more than one Ekrana plan. I think there were two or three. But there's one that's still sitting half in the water. There's another one that's in like a dry dock warehouse. I guess it's a hangar. And but I love all that dereliction stuff.
Ex-Soviet stuff as well is brilliant. I mean, have you ever dropped down the internet wormhole of looking up the Soviet shuttle program and how those bad boys sort of ended up going derelict and being in hangars? And an urban explorer went in to look at them, but he basically had to sort of walk across the Russian steppes for 2 days to get there and things.
Really?
Madness, yeah. Really good story.
I love a bit of Urbex, you know me. I mean,
Urbex.
Urbex, yeah. We've talked about it before. In fact, you and I should do some of it. When we're allowed to like breathe near one another, should we do some of that? In fact, no.
We're going to do some Urbex. Well, I think I've mentioned before on the show, haven't I, about what the only bit of Urbexing I've ever done was when I went to the old Longbridge factory, the Rover factory in Birmingham. I'm going to say that I'm not a good Urbexer on my foot. I struggle.
Are you a worrier?
It's not so much the worrying. I'm just not very good at being covert. And,
what, you talk too loudly? Are you a shit whisperer?
Yeah, get a sneezing fit. Shit. No, do you know what? I'm not a shit whisperer, actually, because I pride myself on my whispering. I'm quite a good whisperer.
Nobody's ever said that they pride themselves on whispering. No one's ever said that, have they? You. I'd like to.
It's just talking in black and white. I mean, it's not hard.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, look.
We were going to talk about something else, but I can't. There was another subject we were going to bring up today. Not that
I'll tell you something else I realised over Christmas, and I thought I must mention this to Johnny just because I've got to get it off my chest. It's just I had this moment of realisation from seeing something online that where I suddenly went, oh my God, penny farthings are front wheel drive.
Yeah, they are.
And I just,
they absolutely
I have nothing that I can do with this information. This is merely a statement of fact, but it felt stupid. It had never really occurred to me before. Penny farthings are a front-wheel drive bicycle.
They are, yeah. I don't like the idea. I've ridden a few e-bikes that are front-wheel drive, and they're a little bit disconcerting. Especially,
really?
Yeah, mid-corner on a wet manhole cover, you're in a world of pain if you're not careful.
Yeah, Jesus. Doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah, front-wheel drive electric Brompton I've ridden before.
Really?
I was giving it a little bit of gas out of
Why
a junction.
Why are they front-wheel drive? What, so they separate the electric power from the pedal power? Is that?
Yeah, I think, and it's easier to detach it. So if you wanted to put a conventional wheel back on, you can kind of... A lot of the retrofit kits, from what I can see, are front.
Right, yeah. That makes sense.
But I don't like it. I'm not sure I trust it entirely.
No, that's weird.
But, although, you know, there have been front-wheel drive experimental motorbikes. Yeah, and in fact, someone was talking to me the other day. They said, oh, of course, they've never made a diesel motorbike. And I said, they have, actually.
Yeah, they have.
It was German.
Didn't Enfield make some diesel ones?
The one I remember, because my brother used to buy Classic Bike magazine religiously. I remember one called the Munch Mammoth. And the Munch Mammoth, because it's just got such an amazing name. You look it up. It's got Munch. And the Munch Mammoth was a diesel German motorbike. And I think it had huge capacity. Yeah, here we go. I've just looked it up. It was late 60s, 1.2-litre four-cylinder. And I'm sure it was diesel. If it wasn't diesel, I've completely dreamt it up.
Yeah, I've just looked up. There were diesel Enfields apparently, or people did make them. So that's where I've got that from. I wasn't talking total shit.
Oh, good.
For once, we should probably wrap this up, though. But before we go, one of the things I wanted to talk about is, as threatened at the end of last year, Smith & Sniff now has a Patreon. So if you enjoy this podcast and you desperately hope that we keep doing it throughout this year, then if you're feeling generous and you want to throw in a few quid, it helps us enormously to justify doing it, because we are both self-employed and we spend more time than you might imagine over this in sort of editing it and putting the music on and all that.
Well, it depends how much they imagine, I suppose, but
yeah. So obviously, you know, it's still free, it still pops up on your podcast provider and on YouTube and all of that sort of stuff. We're not demanding money from you, but if you are feeling generous and you want to throw us a few quid or dollars or what have you to keep on doing this, then it is very, very much appreciated. And there's about 200 odd people have already done that, because I mentioned it a couple of times on Twitter over the holidays, and a few people dived in, which is really, really kind of you. So thank you for that.
We haven't done any of the tiers
or anything like that. We've just said, look, you know, if you put some pennies or pounds in, then you get access to our Patreon page, and we just whack up sort of various random bits of fluff. There's an outtake from a previous show up there at the moment, and if I can get it to work,
we're going to put the prototype of video of Smith & Sniff up there.
What we're hoping to do is, yes, put some more sort of bits and pieces, including the very, very first time that Johnny and I filmed ourselves in a car, which wasn't a car, it was a golf buggy. I found some of the footage from that. It's not very good, but
it got lost.
The main camera's got lost, but there's some footage from my phone of us hobbing around in a golf cart, which then gets into a bit of a scrape. And so I'm gonna haul all that together at some point. That'll go on the Patreon. If I can get the tech to work as well, the show will go up a little bit earlier for Patreon sponsors, so you might get access to it on Sunday evening if I can figure that out. Otherwise, it's business as usual, new shows every Monday morning. Anyway, that's enough with the begging bowl, but I do have three more things to share with you. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show. Please go to YouTube and check that out now. Two, I still have a book out. It's called It's called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2. Volume 1 is called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia. Both available exclusively through Amazon as paperback or an ebook for your tedious delectation. And three, if you're of a certain age, which is basically our age, and you grew up in the 80s in the UK, you might remember there were certain TV shows that were staples on the TV and seemed to be on all the time and very exciting. One of them was Street Hawk. The weird thing about Street Hawk is, in fact, it was only made for one series and 13 episodes.
Is that true?
That is true.
And
just to put some perspective on this, because it felt like Street Hawk was on a lot, but it's like it's the Fawlty Towers of those 80s action shows, because 13 episodes and one series, and it was cancelled, so it was very short-lived. Just to give you some perspective on that, Knight Rider ran for four series and 90 episodes. Airwolf also ran for 4 series and 80 episodes. The A-Team did 5 series and 98 episodes. And the Dukes of Hazzard, 7 series, 147 episodes.
Gosh. Streethawks, the rare groove out of all that.
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? You sort of think, oh, that must have been, you know, they must have been quite long running because it was on ITV a lot. But no, 1 series and that was your lot. There'll be more of this.
I remember there was a lot of synthesizer in the intro for Street Hawk. That's all I do.
The music, it's if you're bored. This is something else I'll do every week for Patreon people is do a little page of show notes with some YouTube clips to things we've talked about. So there's an extended version of the Street Hawk theme tune on YouTube. I know you can go and look this up for yourself for free, but you know, if you're particularly idle, give us a quid and I'll give you a list of links to things that are unconnected and strange.
We will try and work out the tiers of Patreon. We're trying to work out whether we go the clown first or the fears first.
Or just the are not enough.
Yes, either way, exactly. Yes. What about on my pillow? Yeah, we haven't thought about that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. And we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Listen.